Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. We've got another busy docket, so let's get to it. First, the preliminary hearing begins for Letitia Stauch, and guess who doesn't want to stay and watch? Second, another twist in the Alex Murdoch situation that took place Saturday. One man's tragedy is another man's opportunity. I'm not exactly sure this story is what the people of that scene were talking about. Next, the community speaks in Georgia. Sometimes cellmates don't always get along. Public officials gone wild. And then finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. Thanks for watching. If you haven't done so, please hit this subscribe button as well as that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. And remember, if you can't watch us, you can always listen to Crime Talk by downloading us on your favorite podcast application. All right, before we get to the docket, we like to support our sponsors, and our sponsors today are Crime Talk Prep. All right, go to Crime Talk Prep. Why? Well, there's a lot of uncertainty in the world. You never know when a disaster is going to strike, and you need to be prepared. When you go to crimetalkprep.com, you're able to get a four-week supply of emergency food supplies at $50 off and free shipping. This is the responsible thing to do. Think about it. There's a big storm coming. You stock up. Well, sometimes you can't always predict when those things are going to happen. You need to be ready. Go to crimetalkprep.com, get your four-week emergency food supply now, and save $50 and get free shipping. You'll be happy you did. All right, let's get straight to the docket. The preliminary hearing has started for Letitia Stauch. That's right. She's the woman accused of murdering her stepson, Gannon Stauch, back in January of 2020. Well, the hearing's supposed to go today and tomorrow, but guess who decided not to stick around? That's right, Letitia Stauch. Remember, Letitia Stauch at one point wanted to represent herself at the preliminary hearing. She said in court today that she completely trusts her attorneys and doesn't feel the need to remain in the courtroom. Now, surprisingly, the court allowed her to waive her appearance, her position being that she doesn't want to listen to people say that she is a bad person and that she did these terrible things. The court surprisingly excused her from those proceedings, and the court also said that he will have her appear from the cell tomorrow via video to see if she has changed her mind and whether she wants to appear in person, which is her absolute right to do so. I'm a little surprised the court allowed her to waive her appearance, but stranger things have happened, and this case certainly is one that keeps getting weirder. So for those who do not recall, Gannon Stauch went missing from his home in El Paso County. That's in Colorado Springs, Colorado. The 11-year-old was reported as a runaway, and then on January 27th of 2020, Letitia Stauch called the El Paso County Sheriff's Office and reported that Gannon had left their home near Colorado Springs and had never returned. Although the preliminary hearing is not being broadcast, there's updates coming in from people that are sitting in the courtroom. Now, inside the courtroom apparently are Gannon's biological family. Letitia Stauch, as we stated, appeared via WebEx briefly, and she waived her right to be there in person. And the DA objected to Letitia Stauch not being there because it makes it hard for the witnesses to point to her and say, oh, she's the person that did it, right? They have to be able to show that it is, in fact, her that is responsible for the death of her stepson, Gannon Stauch. Well, the first witness that was called was a deputy, Jason Yoder, who worked at the Santa Rosa County Sheriff's Office when Gannon's body was found in a suitcase under Highway 90 back on March 17th of 2020. I don't want to get into too graphic details, but Deputy Yoder tells the court that he observed the injuries to the body, injuries to the skull, The fact that there were, in fact, wounds, it would be indicative of a gunshot wound, as well as wounds in the left chest and the right back. There were cuts on the hands and arms consistent with defensive wounds. Now, the autopsy report states that there were 18 sharp forced injuries, and the autopsy report also stated that the cause of death was, in fact, that of a gunshot wound and blunt trauma to the head. Now, the court allowed the deputy to testify, which is kind of expert testimony, but it's a preliminary hearing, that he estimated that the body may have been in the suitcase under the bridge for over a month before the body was recovered. More details to come. Now, certainly, preliminary hearing, the standard is very low, simply that of probable cause. Would a reasonable person believe that Letitia Stauch is responsible for the crime? And there's some evidence to point to that. Very low standard of proof. The case is going to get bound over. Interesting to see that Letitia Stauch didn't show up. Was this some sort of strategy on her part, or just the mere fact that she doesn't want to sit there and listen to what is being said? All right, on to another strange case. That's right, the one involving Alex Murdoch. Remember, he's the husband and father of Maggie and Paul Murdoch, who were killed on June 7th, and then apparently was allegedly shot in the head on Saturday, transported via helicopter. And it was originally reported that he went to Savannah for treatment. Now he apparently went to Charleston via helicopter for a superficial head wound. Well, it gets more interesting than that. Well, obviously, we still have this unknown assailant who's driving a truck, but there was no information given to the public as to whom the public could help look for in this particular situation. Then we had the fact that Murdoch resigned from his law firm founded by his great-grandfather, and he was going to enter rehab for an opioid addiction. And this all came as his firm was conducting or completing a forensic accounting, which may have uncovered misuse of millions and millions of dollars. There's also allegations that his wife, Maggie, was wanting to conduct some forensic accounting as to their finances as well, just prior to her death. One of our Patreon members in our Patreon show suggested that perhaps there were gambling issues. And frankly, until that point, I hadn't really given it gambling issues. I thought maybe he was just living beyond his means. But that may turn out to be something interesting. We'll have to wait and see how things turn out. But the twist in this case now is that the police have recovered the knife that was allegedly used to slash the tire of Alex Murdoch's back tire on his SUV before he was apparently shot. Well, the knife, guess who owns it? That's right, Alex Murdoch himself. The South Carolina Law Enforcement Agency, also known as SLED, which is leading the investigation regarding Paul and Maggie Murdoch, wouldn't comment on the report about the knife. No arrests have been made in either case, and SLED has not released any description of a suspect or the vehicle allegedly involved in the shooting of Alex Murdoch. Just another case that keeps on giving and gets weirder by the day. All right, we have all heard of the saying that says one man's tragedy is another man's opportunity. Well, I'm not exactly sure that the people that came up with that saying had this in mind. Police have arrested three suspects accused of stealing the identities of people that were either killed or injured after the Champlain Towers crumbled in South Florida earlier this summer. Can you believe this, ladies and gentlemen? That's right. There were seven victims in this case, five of whom are deceased, and apparently purchases were made in their names after June 24th when the 12-story residential building collapsed in Surfside, which is about 6 miles outside of Miami Beach. Alejandro Cacho Medina of North Miami, Rodney Chout of North Miami, and Kimberly Michelle Johnson, also of Miami, are facing multiple counts of identity theft and organized scheme to defraud. Now, a sister of one of the victims said she first noticed bizarre activity with her loved one's accounts a few weeks after the condo crumbled. She said her sister's password on her bank account and credit cards were mysteriously changed. She then saw emails showing that money transfers from the accounts that she didn't do and didn't recognize showed up. It's clear from the evidence, apparently, to the police that these people were professionals. And obviously the family's upset because who would do something like this and take advantage of this tragedy? Well, there's always people out there that will do that. Well, the suspects allegedly stole at least $45,000 and attempted to steal another $67,000 before they were finally arrested. You have to be careful out there, ladies and gentlemen. You never know when bad people will strike. All right, next on the docket, the community speaks. All right, a Georgia grand jury has declined to indict a teenage boy who told investigators, confessed that he killed his father because he had had enough of his father's abusing his mother. Tucker Gales was 15 when he was arrested on October 28th for the shooting death of Wesley Gales, 66, his father, and he admitted to the police deputies that he shot his father in the head with a .22 caliber rifle because of the repeated abuse. Now, the district attorney said that the grand jury met and they saw no cause to indict young Tucker Gales. The decision, he said, represents the combined wisdom of our community, and it's the final word on the case. Now, the court records have shown that there was, in fact, a history of abuse in the home, including a guilty plea back in May of 2020 to domestic abuse and child cruelty charges related to an incident in May. The elder Wesley Gales was sentenced to 12 months probation. In that incident, Wesley Gales was accused of punching his wife, Deborah, in the eye, kicking her in the head, and throwing a DVD player down the hall. In September of 2020, Deborah Gales called 911 and reported that her husband had threatened to shoot her and her son, and Wesley Gales denied the allegations, and police declined to file charges because of conflicting accounts. Wow. Well, there were also previous accusations going back to at least 2011, but none put Wesley Gales in jail. Now, after Tucker Gales' arrest, community members swarmed social media in support of him, and a local attorney volunteered to take his case free of charge. This case is now over, and obviously, he has nothing to worry about. He cannot be charged any further. Now, most jurisdictions would charge that and say that abuse that took place months ago was not an imminent danger, and that is simply first-degree murder. But that is the beautiful thing. We have a jury system, and including a grand jury system, and the grand jury can say, nope, no crime here. So it confirms my theory that every now and then a good defense is, well, the dead guy deserved killing, and apparently the community believes so in this particular case. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever, but if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship, you're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. Well, when people go to prison, they get a cellmate, and sometimes they don't always get along. So an Oklahoma prisoner is serving multiple life sentences for various sex-related crimes, allegedly murdering his cellmate, a convicted child killer. The Oklahoma Department of Corrections said in a statement that the Lawton Correctional Facility staff found an inmate by the name of Riley Walker deceased in his cell. Walker's cellmate, Aaron Stone, allegedly confessed to the slaying. And according to the report, in 2011, Stone broke into a family's Comanche County home where he beat, sexually assaulted hostages in an ordeal that lasted several hours. Stone also fatally shot the family dog and threatened one of the victim's six-year-old daughters. Stone ultimately pled guilty to 15 criminal counts, including rape, sodomy, robbery, kidnapping, and cruelty to animals. He was sentenced to serve 14 life sentences concurrently, two of which were life sentences without the possibility of parole. Well, in 2012, Walker was sentenced to life in prison without parole for killing his 14-month-old daughter, who was found dead in her bedroom with blunt force trauma to her head. The girl had been dead in her bed for several hours before emergency crews were called. Walker's daughter also had a 4-inch skull fracture and bruising all over her body. Now, it's not exactly clear what charges Stone is facing because, well, you don't know if there's a self-defense issue or what have you. Maybe he was a loud snorer and his cellmate just didn't like it. But the reality of it is, what are you going to do to a guy that is facing life in prison already? I guess you could give him the death penalty, but a DA may have a difficult time to say that a guy that kills children warrants the death penalty when it didn't warrant it, when the defendant did all those other horrible things as well. Tough case. You just can't make this stuff up, ladies and gentlemen. Next on the docket, public officials gone wild. And I mean by that is a corrupt public official, allegedly. The Chattahoochee Judicial Circuit District Attorney Mark Preston was arrested on Tuesday after being indicted by the Muskegee County Grand Jury on 9 felony counts of misconduct in office, which include charges of attempting to bribe a subordinate and perjury. The Chattahoochee Judicial District Attorney Mark Preston was arrested on Tuesday after being indicted by a Muskegee County Grand Jury on 9 felony counts of misconduct in office, including charges of attempted bribery and suborning of perjury. Now, this is the third time that Jones took office since January of 2020, where he's been indicted in a criminal case. Now, according to the indictment that was filed Tuesday, the Superior Court of Muskegee County, Jones allegedly tried in July to persuade a police officer to lie to a grand jury to get a murder indictment. Wrong. Prosecutors alleged that Jones told the officer to testify about a bogus motive to pin charges on a defendant by the name of Elijah Farrell, who was charged with involuntary manslaughter in the shooting death of his girlfriend, a woman by the name of Sarah Holtrop. Now, Jones wanted the officer to claim that Farrell believed Holtrop was cheating on him in a bid to upgrade the charges to intentional murder. Now, Jones is also accused of attempting to bribe an assistant district attorney under his supervision. And per the indictment, Jones allegedly offered a state prosecutor $1,000 in March if she was able to obtain a murder conviction in a particular case. Jones is charged with 2 counts of influencing a witness, 2 counts of bribery, 2 counts of violation of his oath by a public officer, 2 counts of attempted violation of oath by a public officer, and 1 count of attempted suborning of perjury. A state judge earlier this month refused to dismiss an indictment against Jones on the charge of first-degree criminal damage. We brought you this story where he was interfering with government property, allegedly, and conspiracy for his role in a campaign video back in May of 2020. The video, for which Jones didn't have a permit, included several cars performing donuts in a parking lot, but it ultimately caused damage of some $306,000. The trial for that particular case begins next week. We'll try to keep you updated on the result. And then finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Please meet Jessica Smith. Oliver, yep, she drove past several patrol cars while behind the wheel of a golf cart, and the police were there for some sort of standoff with a shooter. Anyway, she drove right past them in her golf cart, and she was completely butt naked. That's right, absolutely naked. She drove her little golf cart right past the house where the armed suspect was on the roof. When Smith refused to get out of the golf cart, she was assisted out and handcuffed early in the incident. Now, Smith smelled of alcohol and was, like I said, completely nude and was charged with obstruction, a misdemeanor. She was released on her own recognizance. And yes, I'm sure she did smell of an odor of an unknown alcoholic beverage. And I'm sure if they tested her blood, there would probably be some unknown controlled substance in her system as well. All right, that's all we have for you today. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.